Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Hello, world. This is Pamela Elaine Lockridge in for Cara Levine tonight. She's usually on every Friday, and we miss her tonight. She'll be back Tuesday, though. This is Pamela with the Stop Child Abuse Now radio show, scan number 222665. And before we get started, I want to talk about the NASCA National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, and what our mission is. We have a single purpose at NASCA: to address issues related to child abuse, trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so with two goals in mind. Number one, educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing child sexual abuse and child abuse, presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. Number two, we offer hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. And we want to welcome everybody here tonight. And I want to give out the phone number to call tonight so you can interact with our special guest, which is Diana Strong. And the number is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. So welcome, everybody, to the show tonight. And Diana Strong, who is our guest, she's from Hot Springs, Arkansas, and she was abused by her stepdad. And then she was abused for many years by him. So we're going to bring her on and ask her to start telling us her story about what happened to her. So, Diana, this is
Hi,
Pamela,
Pamela,
your host. Hi. And so
hi.
I want to, hi, and Bill's our co-host. He's the founder of NASCA, and he's on tonight. And so we have quite a panel, and I told you how the show would go with the different segments. And so what we're going to do is have you take us chronologically through your years and start, you know, about with your family of origin, and did you have any sisters, brothers, and when your abuse started, okay?
Sure. I say sure, but I have to be honest, outside of a therapeutic setting, this is the first time that I'm doing this, so I'll do my best. I am the oldest of...
Okay.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, ma'am. I just want to ask you
okay.
to just relax and feel comfortable. All of us here are survivors. So you're talking to a group of survivors, and those streaming in or calling in are survivors as well. So you're among a family of survivors. So I want you to relax, and if anything triggers you and you don't want to answer that, well, just let us know, and we will slow down or because we want to go at your pace, okay?
Oh, Thanks for that safe space, Pamela. That means a lot. Thank you so much. So I come from, I have four siblings. Two are with a different dad, and my sister is 17 months younger than I am. I'm the oldest, obviously. I just remember my mom had me when she was 16, so she was a kid herself, and she had my you know, my sister, so she had two of us before she was even 18 years old, and it was tough in that I don't remember much outside of a ton of fighting, and he had left, and then my mom met someone right away who became my stepdad, and they had two more children. So by the time my mom was 22, she had four of us, and that relationship as well was very volatile. And it was only through therapy that I was able to realize the trauma that had happened, especially that young in my life, because I have, as a result of the abuse, DID, which is dissociative identity disorder, and one of my others is that child of 3 years old, and it was really fun finding her and reconnecting and learning that it's not a weak part of me, but actually she's the strongest part of me. So she survived, and that just started us off on a very long journey, and that has brought a lot of pain and anguish to this day.
Okay, you say 3 years old. Do you remember a snapshot or a video of that? What can you see at 3 years old? And I relate to you because mine started at four, and I can actually, you know, see the abuse.
Yeah, I can feel the, yeah, I can still feel the, if I permit it, the pinning down, and the isolation, I can still feel the vulnerability that I felt at that time, and the nerviness I felt for most of my life. So it was, I, if I allow it, I do have a flashback. They have lessened considerably, but for most of my years, until therapy helped me, the flashbacks were often of that time in my life and seeing the person.
So it sounds like he committed violence against you. Was your abuse?
Oh, there was considerable violence. If it wasn't physical, it was. And it's ironic because my sister has no recollection of any memories before the age of 12, and she suffered as much as I. And I remember the vivid details. So it's really interesting how the brain works in different people to protect them.
Absolutely. So do you remember 4 and 5, like when you started school, kindergarten, anything like that? How was kindergarten for you? Were you able to focus?
I remember my school years were very, really tough because I was extremely introverted and I was extremely shy, and I don't know why I was targeted a lot. I was picked on a lot, and especially in those early years, leaving to go to school was very hard because I was just embarrassed. I just was so insecure, and that continued through all of my years in school. But tougher coming home, I think. I was scared. I was more afraid of coming home than going to school. So school for me was a salvation, and I think that's why I have such a love of learning, because it was an escape from that for a little bit.
Right, I hear that a lot. How were your grades when you were growing up going to school? Were they good grades, or you couldn't focus and got poor grades? How did that work for you?
For me, because I just absolutely loved, again, it was my safe zone. School was always my safe place. So when I was there, I enjoyed learning, and I loved losing myself there. But the challenge was it was never good enough when I got home, so there would be repercussions if I didn't bring home that A. It would be penalized. So it was a catch-22. It was my safe space, but at the same time, it was dangerous because I was never, no matter how hard I tried, it seemed like it was never enough. So it was just another source of pain for me to, because I wasn't able to perform to the expectations that were set for me, which was extremely high.
So how did your biological father leaving you and abandoning you, how did that affect you?
Yeah, that's a great question because I ended up meeting him 30 years after he had left. So I was now 40. So I was 40 years after he left, I ended up getting reunited with him. And I didn't realize that it affected me until I saw him again. And I was just like, hey, what are you doing in my house? My ex-husband thought it would be good to reintroduce us. So leaving, I don't know. I can't tell you if that affected me or not, that feeling of abandonment. I guess that's some more therapy that'll come out. But I know when I was reunited and he basically wanted nothing to do with me unless I reconnected him with my mother, traumatized me more than when he originally left because I realized he really never cared about me or my sister. That was devastating.
Wow. So talk about your elementary years, like when you were in 6th, 7th, 8th grade.
That was worst.
Did he ever threaten you?
Why do you ask about that period, Pamela? What have you noticed?
What do you mean?
Is there something that you notice around that age? Because that's such a critical age in any of us, right? And yeah, that's where it really came to a fruition was in my teenage years, early years, like in the 7th, 8th grade. That was horrible for me. Maybe it's because you're more self-aware. Is that what you find in your other interviews?
Well, I'm a social worker. I know about development. Human development.
Exactly.
So, I would want to know how did you relate to others?
I didn't.
Did you have friendships?
I was not. Yeah, I never was able. Well, first of all, we were very isolated growing up, and it was better that way because again, we wanted to keep whatever was happening in the home. So whenever I was outside the home, and because I had such severe I had no communication skills whatsoever, and I was so ashamed. And my self-esteem, there was none, that in school I would hide. I would hide in the gym or the library. Those were places where I could hide because I just couldn't be around people. It was impossible to be around people. I couldn't even walk. I would get such social anxiety, my legs would give out in a crowded room. I couldn't go to the cafeteria or I couldn't walk. My legs would just give out. I had that much anxiety around people, especially male, any male person. I was constantly beat up, bullied, especially by men, even in school by boys. So it was just one thing after another with the male species for me. It just never seemed to go well. Especially in junior high, it was the worst.
Wow. So you isolated yourself. That's kind of what happened. But did your stepdad threaten you if you told?
It didn't matter. It didn't matter. We were all under his control. It didn't matter. My mother, it didn't matter. It really didn't. And then when she finally did leave him, she ended up being with other people who just took over. So it didn't matter. Who knew, or it was common knowledge. It's just what was. She was getting beat up, and so were we, So she chose to see, I guess, what she wanted to, and she chose to see what she didn't want to see. Because she was so out of control at that time. I mean, she had to feed her kids, and in order to feed them, we had to stay there. And then when she finally left, we ended up staying with him because she couldn't afford to support her kids and feed us. So she basically put us in the lion's den with the lion.
Right. Well, I'm going to bring the panel on, if you don't mind. We'll stop right here and let them interact with you. I've got a cough right now, and I'm just put a lozenger in. So I believe
okay.
that will help my cough. Okay, so I'm going to go to Kim in Colorado. Kim, you're on with Diana.
Hi. Thanks, Pamela. And hi, Bill. And hi, Diana.
Hi, Kim.
I'm so sorry that you've had to go through all of that. It's, you know, every single time I hear a new story, it just breaks my heart again. You know, and I know that that's what we do here. But it still is just sad. And we have a lot in common. My mom was 16 as well when she had me, and she had two kids by 20 and was divorced, and then it was my stepdad who raised me, and so I felt the same way. My abuse started with neighbors and stuff, but do you still have contact with, like, your mom or your stepdad at all?
No, nobody. No, I disowned all of my family. I just have my children and my sister and two uncles that I still associate with because I got to a stage, probably about 5 years ago now, where I decided I'm done living the lie and just everybody hanging out like it's all accepted. And I disowned everybody and walked away from that and owned my freedom at that point. I still don't talk to
Good
them.
For you.
They're dead to me. Yeah.
Well, yeah, if they're toxic people, then you need to get away from it, for sure, for sure.
Well, and their lies continue. It just continues, and I'm like,
yeah.
I'm done with the fraud. I'm not going to do this anymore. It's not okay. And it really felt great
yeah.
to do that, to own that, and to say, you know, and take
yeah.
it back and demand respect. And even if they don't give it to me, I gave it to myself.
Absolutely. Good for you. I'm at that place, too, in my life where I'm just like, you know what? I'm going to start taking care of myself. Nobody else is doing it for me. How
That's
old are
right.
your kiddos?
Oh, my gosh. My oldest is 25 and my youngest is 16. I have five.
Oh, okay. 25 and 16. And I think the one thing that, and I'm not going to talk too long, but raising my kids that I remember, I don't know if you feel this way too, is just kind of not knowing exactly how to raise them. I knew how not to raise them, and that's kind of what I went by because I wanted them to be safe. And so I actually put myself in a relationship, my marriage, that is very toxic, and it's toxic in a different way that I wasn't paying attention to because I was really paying attention to nobody's going to sexually abuse my children. And so, it's hard to raise kids, too, when you're dealing with this, all this stuff that goes on in your head. Do you feel they've been affected in any way?
Oh, my God, my kids they're so affected by it. Well, I ended up marrying,
yeah.
my first marriage was he could have cloned. He was just exactly like my mother's boyfriends and my biological father. He's just a clone. But then, ironically, so I had my kids, and I didn't even know I was sexually abused. That didn't come out until the physical abuse got so bad that I took my kids and I left my husband. And through therapy, I realized that I was sexually abused. And then, because I have DID, so I had amnesia, severe amnesia. With my kids, we came to find out they were sexually abused. So I didn't see it. I couldn't identify it. And then when it was amazing. So my abuse came to light as I was learning that they were being abused. So it was extremely, it was horrible, horrible. I was like, oh my gosh. So then, of course, that brought me, again, just like you, then I was alone. I would not get in a relationship. And I didn't. I raised my kids by myself. I knew I had to change to break that cycle. So I worked on myself for over 10 years. I raised my five by myself to be able to change so that I didn't attract that any longer. And I didn't know what that change looked like. I just knew I would never, ever put them in harm's way again.
Yeah, good for you. Well, you're doing a wonderful job. Thank you so much for just sharing your heart and
thank
everything
you.
You're going through. You're in my prayers.
Thank you. Thank you for your support, Kim.
You're welcome.
We'll come back to you, Kim, okay, as the story goes.
Okay.
I'm going to put you on with Darlene. She's the Tennessee ambassador, and I want to tell you, Kim is our new Colorado ambassador for NASCA, and we'll talk about that later. Darlene, you're on with Diana, our special guest.
Hello, Diana.
Hey, Darlene.
Your story is a lot similar to mine, and I'm sorry that you had to go through that. I did not realize that, you know, I knew about the regular abuse, you know, of course, you know, because it was an everyday thing, you know, but the sexual abuse was what was basically hidden, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And I realized, you know, mine began about age 2 as well. I noticed, and it didn't help me that my ex, he wasn't abusing the kids, he was abusing me. So while I was remembering having the memories of the past abuse, he was abusing me as well. So it's like, oh, crap, you know?
Right. I'm sorry, Darlene.
So further intensified. But that's okay. I can look at it now, and he's the one, he's the culprit, you know, he's the abuser, you know, what nothing I said or nothing I did. It's illness, you know, where he tried to control everything, you know, narcissist.
Yeah, same thing.
So,
yep.
So that's all the way I look at it, is that if a horror stories will help somebody else, I can look at it in a good way, even though at times it really a pain in the butt.
Good for you.
Well, I am so glad that you're an ambassador. Welcome to the ambassadorship, whatever. I'm getting tongue twisted. I'm sorry, y'all.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go to Bill. Bill Founder. Let's see what he has to say. Bill, hello.
Hi.
Welcome to the show.
I'm so glad we're reactivizing our ambassadorships because we really need that. So thank you, those of you who are new to the ambassadors. We really appreciate it. I thought it was interesting, Pamela, when you asked, can you describe anything that happened in your adolescent years? She said, why did you think of that? Well, you know why? Because we're all affected. We get it.
Right.
There's really no part of, and this is not surprising to us, but it might be to some listeners, there's no part of our childhood that we weren't bothered by the abuse that we were going to through, and bothered is a very easy word to use. I mean, we were in pain through all of it, all of our childhood.
Right.
Once the abuse started, and then it continues in our adulthood, it stops being victimization. It starts being, sort of where traumatization. Because now we're probably not being victimized, at least by the same people, but we certainly, that's where the trauma, you know, takes over our adult life. You know, once you're 18 and 20 and 21, you know, you're no longer living with the folks, most of us, our families anyway, but we're living with the trauma from what occurred when we were young. So anyway, I thought it was interesting that it wasn't a trick question, in other words.
No, I didn't see it as such. And you're right, Bill. And thank you for what you have done. This platform is amazing. When I first spoke with Pamela, I had realized that I hadn't talked about this outside of a therapeutic setting and for my children.
Right.
And when she
was,
and it really felt great to connect with someone who could relate. That's not a therapist. They've actually been through it. And I'm telling you, Bill, I just thank you. And thank you, Pamela, because it really felt good it really felt great to think that I'm not alone in this, you know.
No, you're not alone.
And I know you know.
That's what we want our listeners to understand. They are not alone. They never will be alone. In other words, they don't have to ever be alone again, because the NASCA family is not going to go anywhere on them, and we're going to be able to provide dozens and hundreds and thousands of potential people to be with who will never tell you to go away. They want you, and we need each other. So, yeah, God bless you for what you're doing. We really appreciate it, and thanks for becoming an ambassador, too. That's great.
Oh, gosh, Bill,
Let me conclude by making a comment about what you just said. It's really important to tell your story. If you can't tell your story in a public forum, that's fine. But you got to find a forum to tell it in that's appropriate. And it might be with your minister. It might be with your, you know, with your recovery group. It might be with your counselor. And then eventually, after you've told your story a few times and got it out there, you might feel ready to speak in front of a group. And, you know, the COVID thing is ending now. It's coming, at least it's coming, that we're starting to deal with it a little better. And I can foresee the future this summer, starting now, really, it's going to be possible to meet in groups, even if some of us are masked and so forth. It's going to be possible to do actual presentations in front of live groups. And I'll tell you what, when you speak in front of a live group and you tell your story, that's powerful. I mean, you're doing it tonight. The radio counts. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, I think we're even more effective when we can find opportunities to speak and say, you know, I'm a member of NASCA and what it has meant to me and so forth, and tell our story. Mm-hmm. We'll support you in any way that you need to that, and we'll put your, you know, we'll put you front and center, because I think the telling of the story kind of one-on-one, especially when there might be newcomers in the room, is one of the best ways to not only educate the public, which you're always doing when you speak, but also to attract the newcomers to their own recovery, to their own risking whatever they have to risk in order to get on a healing journey. So I just wanted to make that note. I'll shut up now, but thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Bill, so much.
I like to hear Bill talk. He's got a lot. He is just a walking web. He's a walking website, what he is. Thank you, Bill.
You're welcome.
Thank you. All right. I'm going to bring Kirsten on. Kirsten is from Texas.
Yes.
Kirsten?
Yes, yes.
You're on with...
Hi. Good evening, Diana.
Hi, Kirsten.
I am so glad that you are sharing your story, and I just kind of had this visual, and I was just thinking, I told my story a few weeks ago. It was on the 26th of last month, and I kind of feel like each time I hear another NASCA story of another survivor, it's like another light is being turned on. It's like these twinkle lights and another light and another light and another light goes on. And now here's another light that I can hold close and hold up and say, we are all coming together as a family. And I actually am really receiving a lot of healing from hearing other people's stories. I was too like you, and I had never shared my story outside of with a therapist. And I did actually share my story a little bit with Pamela when she reached out to me. So this is really an amazing organization. And I just want to tell you, I'm really proud of you, and that it takes a lot of courage to do this. And I'm here with you. I'm supporting you tonight. And I will be on here for the rest of the evening.
Oh, gosh. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. What's interesting is I go and I mentor, I advocate for, and I work with a lot of people of domestic abuse. And that's what I do. I have to give back. It's part of my healing. So I hear their stories a lot. And to actually, and I tell it, but not in detail like this.
But I do know that when I do let them know I'm a survivor, that it changes the whole discussion, a complete 180. When they know I get it, we're in a different place. And it's just like now, right? You're with family.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
It's like and it connects us. It's like the twinkle lights. We're all connected and we're all shining bright because we are standing up and standing in this circle of survivors. So I'm really proud of you, and I'm so glad that you're sharing your story.
Thank you, and I look forward to going back and listening to yours.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much, Kirsten. We have another caller from the 501 area code. Who am I speaking with?
Hi, this is Nissa.
Who? Nissa. Hey, Nissa.
Nissa. Hi.
What's your last name?
Nissa, Rosenbein.
Okay, Nissa, M-I what?
S-S-A.
S-S-A, where are you calling from?
Arkansas.
Okay, do you know our guest?
Yes, she's my best friend.
Diana, you're on with Nissa.
Girl,
thanks for calling.
First of
in.
All, I love you, and I've got tears in my eyes. But I want everyone to know that what you have done with your life to make your pain make change has been incredible. Throughout your abuse, you have risen to be a warrior. And you empower other people. And I want everyone to know that you are a fighter. And you inspire me every day.
Thank you, honey.
Now Diana's crying. Diana?
Yeah, because Nissa knows me better than anybody.
Yeah.
I mean,
I had a feeling.
She talks about... She talks about how introverted you were, but you would never know it. You would never know it. She lights up the room when she walks in. Everyone wants to know her. Everyone wants to be close to her. Everyone wants to be around her. She is a glowing light. And I think she's so strong because she's lived through this. She is so strong. She's the strongest woman that I know. And I mean that, and I love you so much.
I love you, too. Thanks, Nissa.
Nissa, thank you for calling.
You made me cry. Thank you, babe.
You're welcome. It's a great show. I'm enjoying it.
Thank you.
Tears are healing.
I love you. I love you, honey. Thank you.
We have another guest. It's William from Alabama. Let's see what William wants to. William, you have a question or a comment for Diana?
Not yet. I just joined.
Okay. Well, I
want
to introduce you to her. She's Diana Strong from Hot Springs, Arkansas, and she is a strong survivor.
Hi, William.
William from Alabama. Hi. I'm going to put him back on to listen, and we're going to go back to your story. I wanted to ask you about, I wanted to ask you one question that I asked, but I didn't hear the answer. Maybe it's because I was coughing, but you said he never threatened you, right? To told you not to tell anybody. And if you told it, he never said that to you, like, don't tell anybody.
Pamela, I honestly cannot answer that question. I have a lot of, the only way I was able to remember was through therapy, and that's through bits and pieces in the flashback. So I honestly can't answer that question.
Okay. Let's go through your 9th through 12th grade. How did you act around socially, around your peers? Did you have any boy that was interested in you at all? I mean, how did that go for you?
Yeah, so. There was no social anything. Again, I kept to myself. I was, if anything, I started to talk a little bit to the geeks, to other people who didn't belong. But besides that, I went to school, kept my head down, went home, and that was it. I got a job in high school at McDonald's. So that was really cool because it got me out of the house. Again, anything to get me out of the house is really good. Socially, there was no social. The best thing that ever happened to me in junior high was honestly when I tried to get away from, there was these two boys coming down the hallway, and I told you I just couldn't deal. So I slipped into a room, and it just happened to be a runner's club. And I was just sitting there to hide from these boys, so because my legs were going to give out, and I'd fall in the hall and be embarrassed again. So I hid, and so I ended up joining the runner's club completely by default. And it was the best thing that ever happened to me because, again, I could run by myself. So as part of this run, and that got me on an athletic journey that helped me to have some kind of an outlet because I was able to join the sports clubs and get out of the house more. And even with my sports, again, I was always bullied and I was always picked on, and especially where I went, it was inner city. So usually I was just really picked on, and but it was still a way for me to do something to get my aggression out, my frustration out, my anything, just and to get out of the house at the same time. And that started me running, and then running brought me to to the gym, and then the gym brought me to. So it just was another outlet for me that was a really important release, because I'm telling you, I would have imploded. I don't know what else I would have done if it wasn't hit that road and get away out of the house even more, especially in the summertime when school was not in session.
Well, you said you fail. Did they ever wonder why, your mother wonder why you were falling like that? Did they, to the doctor, or?
Well, that's another interesting story. At 7, actually, I ended up having an operation because I kept peeing the bed. And I'm just going to be honest with you, I mean, because you all know the symptoms, right? So I was peeing the bed, so my mother brought me to a surgeon, and and they're like, well, we can do this operation. My urethra tube was widened. And looking back, I was so angry because that operation is completely useless. And I was peeing the bed because I was fucking being abused. That's what was happening. Sorry. Not because I had any reason that I needed surgery. And the worst part was for that surgery, I had doctors poking down there all the time. It was so embarrassing. So embarrassing. It was some of the most traumatic time of my entire life. And why? Because she was angry because I kept peeing the bed. And why? Because she kept leaving me alone, and ignoring the fact of what was going on. So it was very, very frustrating.
So you're remembering this hindsight. You didn't remember, you didn't have the wherewithal.
No, everything was hindsight, yeah. I didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't. And it wasn't until I actually looked up the surgery. Well, and then with my children, coming to recognize that that's a very important sign, and then thinking about that, and then looking up the surgery that I had and how completely just useless that surgery was, and the trauma just from that surgery, because of the trauma I was already having with the sexual abuse. It made me so angry. I said, are you kidding me? It was just unbelievable.
That was unbelievable. So it says after 18, at 18, you ran away.
I had enough because, again, we So at 18, I finally had enough, and I left. I wasn't going to take it anymore, so I moved in with my boyfriend at the time, and then honestly, I lived out of my car for a while because I didn't want to an infringement on anybody. So I lived out in my car for a while, and I just hopped around and saved up money until I was finally able to get an apartment.
Okay.
It was road infested, but it still was an apartment. To this day, I can't stand roaches. Any kind of bugs, they gross me out because I had bugs everywhere.
I imagine. So did you get a car from working at McDonald's? That how you saved
the
money from McDonald's?
I ended up, yes, yeah, the car I ended up saving with from McDonald's, and I worked really hard. And it was a, it was only a little Chevette, and it was from an auction, but at just the same, it was my little car, and it fit enough of it, it fit me in it, and whatever I needed to carry with me was just some clothes, and so it was perfect for what I needed at the time.
All right, so then you go on to say you married a man that continued the same abuse. What age did you get married?
I didn't get married till I was 29. I got married later in life. And my 20s, it's a miracle I'm alive, to be honest with you, because I was switching a lot at that time. I have had a lot of blackouts from that time. I didn't understand what was going on. I thought I was losing my mind. But it was just that I was switching, come to find out now with therapy. I did get married at 29, and from 29 to 40 were some of the most terrific years of my life, and that's on top of my childhood. So that's saying a lot about that marriage. And I had 4 kids in 5 years with him, and then I came to find out that he was abusing them. I didn't understand that at the time, and we had to go underground and hide. And that was a long journey in itself, because like I said, I discovered the extreme of their abuse as I was learning about mine.
Can you tell me what switching is? Because that's the first time I've heard that term. I don't know if anybody else knows what it is.
Oh gosh, yes, absolutely. I would love to explain that. Switching is when you go from one other to another. So with DID, dissociative identity disorder, it means that there's a severe trauma, usually in the earlier years. So your brain, in order to, for survival sake, it divides up into different parts so that it's able to manage the pain and the trauma, and it doesn't ever heal back together again. So what happens is you develop these different personalities, multiple personality, is what it used to be called in the old days. What would happen is switching is when you go from one personality to another. So if I would feel threatened, not knowing it, I would go into a different personality. And what happens when that happens is you, in my case, you have no recollection that's even happening. So I'll just have a gap in time. And that would happen from an hour to days at a time.
Oh, my goodness. So if it was days at a time, would you end up in the hospital?
No, I just wouldn't remember what happened during those days. That other personality would take over during that time, and I would function as that other personality. But then when I would switch back to the primary or, you know, this person, the main person, I just wouldn't remember what happened during that time. I mean, there was many times I'd go on a date and I think, you know, I must have been set a date rape drug because I wouldn't remember the night or the next day, and there was just huge gaps in my memory, and I couldn't understand it until I got therapy and I realized what was going on. I wasn't losing my mind, because that's what it feels like. And in addition to that, that's what my ex-husband kept telling me, is that I was only because that was his technique. But anyway, yeah, switching is, and I still have it happen, but it's not as severe in that I've done a lot of therapy to integrate my others, so that is, you know, but it does still happen, and it'll never go away. It's just something I manage, and thank God I have a fiance that helps me with that, because it can definitely affect your relationship.
Oh, imagine. So I guess, you know, it's very hard to understand DID unless you have it. I mean, you know, I had bipolar, and I knew before I was treated that I would change into a person that I didn't want to be for a couple of days. You know, was manic and grandiose and all kinds of stuff, and then I'd go into a rage, and I'd just be horrible, and then I'd come out at me, and I'd ask myself, what happened, you know? And people were starting to think that was just me, but it wasn't me, and it was cyclical. So, you know, I think unless you have the actual, disorder, you really can't hardly explain it to people. you know.
No, no. And well, and that's what's, but that's the same thing, Pamela, as being a survivor of abuse. It's the same thing.
Right.
You know, it's like a subgroup. People who are fellow survivors can understand that. So that's why it's really great to have our group. And then in addition to it, to have bipolar or to have DID, these things that are, you know, that have happened as a result of, it's even more of a subculture, you know, a subgroup. So to have people who actually understand that is absolutely amazing because, again, my daughter, and that's another painful thing, is because my children, I repeated the cycle with my children, and they suffered as I, not as long, but they still suffered traumatically. Now I have, out of my five children, one of which has a different dad, so she was protected from that, but she still has issues from the trauma she had witnessed. And my first daughter has bipolar as well. They all have PTSD. They all have anxiety, panic disorders, and depression. But in addition to that, she has bipolar. My second son has oppositional defiant disorder. My third son has DID as well. Oh, and my first daughter has, on top of bipolar, DID. And all because the trauma was so severe. And that's what breaks my heart, is that my children suffered like I do, and there's nothing more painful. I'll take my shit. But to have them experience it, it just, it breaks my heart. And that's, and if I didn't have a way to change that pain and funnel it into something productive like what I do today, I honestly don't think I'd want to live. It would be impossible for me because the pain is that severe that they had experienced all of that too.
Diane, I just want to tell you that because of my bipolar, until it was treated, you know, my children felt the effects of what they saw, you know, trash in the house, always cussing and swearing at my husband, you know, seeing me in a rage. They didn't know what was going on. And so just recently I had to ask my daughter for forgiveness. I had to hear the words, "Mother, I was scared of you most of my life." That was a gut punch.
Yeah.
You know, but, and I just, you know, I just feel horrible for her. But today she's got a master's degree in nursing and business, and she's going to be a nurse, psych nurse practitioner, which is the nursing side of being a psychiatric doctor. So, I mean, something good came out of it, you know, but I just hate that she had to suffer that.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to Kim. Colorado, can we go back to the panel? Is that okay?
Sure.
Kim in Colorado, hello. You're on with Diane.
Hi, thanks, Pamela. Hi, Diana. You know, I was going to tell you that, I don't know if you've ever heard this before or not, but listening to a speaker one time, he told me that every time you say your story out loud and talk about it, your body doesn't necessarily realize that you're not still in that.
Yeah.
So a lot of times
right.
your body feels that, right? So
yep.
you're doing a wonderful job, though, tonight. And just so you know that, we're all safe here, and we appreciate you just sharing.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I had not the same situation. I had my appendix burst when I was 7 years old. How old were you? I know you probably said it, and I might have missed it, when you were in the hospital for your...
Oh, I was seven.
Seven.
Yeah, I was seven.
Yeah,
yeah,
right about seven, right about that same age. And the doctors, well, when my appendix ruptured, it took probably a month to get me. I was really sick into the doctors because they kept saying, oh, it's all in her head. There must be something going on at school.
Mm.
And there was. Actually, there was stuff going on, you know, like you. I'd already been abused in that way, unfortunately. So, yeah, and I just remember, I'm just going to be really open here, because it's bothered me throughout the years that a little bit, and it was part of that shame, is there were times I would go in the bathroom and masturbate. I mean, that's, there I am, being open. As a little child, and I'm like, you know, why didn't any teachers or anything, why didn't anybody pick up on this stuff, you know?
Right,
it just,
right.
It's just like, why?
Yeah.
How could they have not? I don't get it. But but at least you're, I mean, you're acknowledging it. You apologize to your kids. I've done the same thing. because my, like I said, we're put in a different kind of abuse, emotional, more verbal abuse. But you know, that's all we can do, and we're doing our best as mamas, and hopefully they appreciate that. Hopefully they understand and appreciate that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So all we can do is love them. Love them through all of it. But I love that you changed your name. I Facebook friended you. So, and I was just kind of looking through your Facebook. And I was like,
message me.
Okay, I will.
Thank you.
Yeah, I was like, I love that. I read that little part about you changing your name. That's awesome.
Yes.
That's amazing.
It just became official last week. I was so
congratulations.
Pumped. Thanks.
Oh, congratulations.
Definitely message me. I want to say hi to you.
Okay, I will. I sure will.
All right,
Thank you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kim.
I'm going to bring Darlene from Tennessee on.
Hello. Hello. I am also kind of like did not change my name legally, but for protection reasons, I got it changed at NASCA and in my book. Oh, I can understand that.
Diana, can you hear?
Oh, I can. I'm so happy for you, and I'm so happy you wrote books. Did you write about your experiences?
Yes, ma'am. I got somebody formatting my book at the moment, and they're going to work on it this weekend. So I'm hoping that it will be out within the next couple weeks.
Congratulations. That must
Thank
have been
you.
Very hard, but that is fabulous.
Yeah, it's
wow.
hard, but we still got to do the journey to try to help others, you know?
Oh, man, thank you for that, because I know writing mine is freaking so hard because it triggers me every time and I dread going back and it's really taking longer than I would like, and so thank you
right.
for doing that. I applaud you.
Also, look at when you go to the list, you'll be able to look up Darlene Clark and you can find me and give me a call sometime if you like.
Oh, thank you, Darlene. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Darlene. I'm going to bring Bill on. Bill.
Well, I didn't change my name. I thought about it because my name is so, you know, it's a popular name, not popular, it's a well-known name from the actor, but I never did. And I'm fine. I mean, I've been hanging out with Bill Murray, long before Bill Murray became popular, so it's what I am. But I'm the third. That's why my email address says 3RD, because in my family, I was named after my father and my grandfather, so I'm actually William J. Murray III. Anyhow, we're all special in our own way. And, you know, NASCA has no problem with people being anonymous, frankly. I mean, it's one of our traditions that we allow anonymity whenever it's felt it's necessary. So I have had guests on who have changed their name just for the show or obscured where they're from just for the show and so forth, and we do that. Or sometimes they use a screen name, which has nothing to do with their own name, but it's a screen name, and that's fine too. We all have these issues. Like, I like what you said. It's another subgroup. The DID group is, it's really important that those of us who are not DID do gain some kind of understanding of it, because there are an awful lot of survivors who will be eventually diagnosed with it. And it's not something you know ahead of time. You don't know. In fact, it takes a certain kind of therapist to even bring the suggestion forward that maybe that's what it is that's been going on for at least a portion of, you know, why you do what you do. Because the different personalities don't even know necessarily each other or know what each other do or recall things that happen while when a switch is made. So it behooves us to understand these terms, because we're going to encounter a fair number of fellow survivors who have DID. And, you know, it's up to them to reveal it, but we should be ready to discuss it if they wish to reveal it, like we're doing tonight. The main personality is the one that we're normally listening to, or normally takes the forefront, but it can switch without you even knowing it's happened to one of the other personalities. So just be aware. It's a phenomenon we should know about, those of us who do not have DID, and of course those who do have DID better get some information about it. Am I being accurate? I don't want to say stuff that's not accurate to your experience. You're the one with it. Am I being accurate?
Bill, I really appreciate you addressing it, because it was DID, or dissociative identity disorder, is very tricky because it goes undiagnosed. First of all, it goes misdiagnosed so frequently because you can go by so many different symptoms. Because, again, if you have it, you're not going to be able to identify it because you don't remember.
Right.
You have no idea.
Right.
And then the doctors, right, unless you present with others, then they're not going to be, it's going to be very challenging for them to diagnose it. For me, I was just very fortunate in that I was with a nationally renowned specialist, a trauma specialist, because we're all in trauma therapy at Yale in New Haven. And we talked about something, actually my children's abuse, and I, in front of him and the doctor, the prescribing doctor at the time, I had switched out. So it was unfortunate but very fortunate, because when I switched back, he was like, oh, now I know what's going on. And then I was able to get with a specialist for DID, and then we started integrative therapy. But that is like a one in it. That's like winning the lottery. I mean, being with a trauma specialist that can recognize what was going on and then have a specialist to help me with that, that's unheard of. Now, most people don't have that, obviously. And they don't have people that they have surrounding them that will be able to identify that for them. So it's tricky. And like you said, Bill, unless you're informed that this does exist and this is what's happening, then to get help with that, I mean, it still affects my life. And I've had help. I mean, affects my life in a major way. If I didn't have someone, you know, that loves me enough to deal with the fact that, hey, I'm not going to remember some of our conversations. And you know what? Sometimes I'm even going to reject you, and I'm not even going to remember rejecting you. I mean, it really takes a special person. And that's only two of my known four personalities. But through therapy, you can have, normally at least you have four personalities, but it can go from 13 to many, many others. That I had very little therapy, so that was all we were able to identify at that time. But again, like you said, there's so many different things that happen as a result of the abuse that I think just loving the person and getting them help is a great start. If you do know somebody out there, please help.
Well, so let me just say to people, again, we're talking to the newcomer especially, and to each other who don't have an experience with DID, maybe a friend. We have them. We just don't know that they're here. There's no rule about how many identities there could be. We used to call it multiple identity disorder, but now we call it DID. It's the same. It's an attempt to name the disorder better. So the disassociation has to do with you don't even know what's going on, nor do people around you, because it's not like some of the movies will portray that a person's demeanor changes, they'll change how their facial expressions go and their voice and all this. No, it may, but there's no rule about this. So you need to be diagnosed. This is not a self-diagnosed thing. You don't self-diagnose this. And it'll take a while before somebody who knows you, like your therapist, hopefully who's trained in at least identifying it, may notice it. They may not, because they, as far as they know, they're speaking to the same, well, they are speaking to the same person, but the same personality within the person. They may not know the person switched and that they're not talking to the primary. It's confusing, but it's worth our effort, those of us who don't have it, because we're going to encounter an awful lot of people who do have it, and we need to be compassionate about what we're dealing with and realize we can't really fix this. You know, the fellow survivor who doesn't have it may not be able to, like you say, it's a subgroup of who we are, but we can certainly welcome those who have it, obviously, and help them find others who or assure them that there are others in the group who have the same problem who will be willing to talk to them, like that. But anyway, I don't want to spend the rest of the show talking about it, but I do want to talk about it. I do think it's important, and I appreciate you bringing it up. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you, Bill. I'm going to go to Karsten. Karsten, you're on with Diana.
Hi, Diana. I just wanted to make a comment and then a question. My comment is that your name, I love that you did change your name. It couldn't be more fitting. when I read it
Thank
in
you.
Your bio, I was like, oh, my gosh, that's an amazing last name. I didn't know that you had changed it. And then I was going to ask, in my experience, I have found that I have been facing, like, overwhelming, like, rage and anger. And I was going to ask, are there things that you have been able to do? Have you had those overwhelming emotions come up? And if you do, what do you do with them?
Wow. Thank you for asking that. That's a great question, Kirsten. I have a tremendous amount of rage in me.
Yeah.
I mean, like, a lot. And now what I've learned to do, though, is embrace it. And what I do is I've turned my pain and that rage, I focus it into what I do. I'm a self-defense instructor now. And what I do is I empower other people not to feel helpless and not to feel that they cannot be in control of their personal safety. I do that now. And in my classes, I have them hit a bag. I give them boxing gloves. I teach them to strike with their hands, with their feet, and all of that. Every time I hit a bag, I hit that bag like I'm fighting for my life. And that's how I get rid of it. If I didn't hit a bag, I don't know what I do. And that's how I help other survivors do the same thing.
Yeah, that's really powerful. I love that. I love that.
Kirsten, I probably would be hitting the bottle if I didn't have an outlet. That's how much rage I still have in me. I really do. And I'm okay with it now. I'm at peace with it because I have a way to express it safely and healthy, in a healthy way.
Yeah, I love that. I'm finding that I thought that I had dealt with a substantial amount of the rage, and then it seems like I find myself like in my therapist's office, and I'm like maybe doing like during an EMDR session, and so much rage will just start coming out, and I feel safe with her to get down on the floor and to scream it out or to punch. But sometimes when I'm by myself, I sometimes
Hello? Oh, we lost her.
Yeah, we did.
Kirsten, if you can still hear me, what I would encourage you to do. Are you still there, honey?
Kirsten's not here.
Kirsten, what I would encourage you to do is figure a way, find an outlet for that. Because if if that rage is not getting out of you, then what it is doing is it's eating you from the inside. You got to get rid of that somehow. Find it, maybe an exercise outlet if that's your thing. If art is your thing, if nature is your thing, but figure a way to give yourself grace and to help yourself heal by finding an outlet that you can have access to on a daily basis if you need it.
Can I ask you a question, Diana? This is Pamela. Do you think that anger and crying have anything to do with each other? Can you get so angry that you just burst out in tears and let it out that way?
I think it can. I think so. I'm not much of a crier because I've learned to not cry for so long. It takes a lot to make me cry. For me, anger, the way I release my anger is more, again, when I hit my bag or when I train really, really hard. That's the way I release my anger. For others, crying definitely, you know, I mean, I cried so badly, you know, we all have cried so that it's gut-wrenching. But for me, with my anger, tears won't do it for me because I've learned not to cry for so long. I need another way. I need a physical outlet now.
Okay, good answer. All right, I'm going to bring William on. William's not a survivor, but he's been in law enforcement. So, William, do you have any questions or comments for Diana?
Not really. I understand what she's saying and stuff, and I'm thinking she's doing a good job. Can I just let her go on about her stuff?
Hey, okay. William, thank you for what you do, man. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
All right, let's get back to your story. We're going to go now to, you talked about your therapy a lot. Did you have anything more you wanted to talk about your therapy?
I've had a lot of trauma therapy, but it's something that I revisited through the years. But therapy, I can't say enough about it. I had to make sure I found the right therapist because I didn't trust anybody. And I've had many bad therapists. What does a bad therapist look like? Well, somebody who doesn't really empathize with the pain that you're in. I would categorize them as a bad therapist, or they can't relate. Finding that right therapist has been critical to me and my survival through the years.
I absolutely agree. I'm a social worker, and I know that therapists can sometimes just want the money, right? Just want to get you dependent on them, and that is not
yeah.
That is breaking the code of ethics. We do have a code of ethics. So
yeah.
Let's see here. So it says here that you offer services free. Can you tell about your services? Oh, you're a certified self-defense instructor.
I am. I'm a certified self-defense instructor. I get as much advanced training as I can because, again, I can only give what I've got. So it's important to me that I empower others. I volunteer as much as I am able. Anything to do with domestic violence with women and children in particular are very, very important to me. My goal is to have instructor survivors learn to teach my classes so they can instruct others and just continue that so that I can focus more on getting out there, doing my outreach. But my ultimate is to build my sanctuary. It's going to be called Strong Sanctuary for Survivors. And it's going to be acreage, and we're going to house families of domestic violence, women and children, for a year. We're going to give them housing, legal, job training, therapy, everything that they could possibly need. That took me 30 years of accumulated help to get. I want to condense this into one spot with professionals. Within a year, they can get all of the help that they need and deserve to start all over again, because a lot of us that have trauma and these broken homes as adults are because we've never gotten that help through the years. And I don't want people to have to take 30 years to piece their lives together. I want to help them do it quicker so that they can break that curse and help their children to maybe have a different outcome than we had and are having.
That is so profound and deep. But, you know, we need to do things like that in the 21st century. We got to come out of the dark ages, you know, and start thinking outside the box, ways to help people, you know, like what you're
Well, like what Bill has done with this platform. I mean, if we don't do something to change, if I don't do something to help somebody else get through this, then what's the point of having gone through it? I can't undo what happened to myself or my children, but I can impact others that follow me, and I will do that.
Okay. Let's see here. It says, you've done some children's nonprofits and fundraisers?
I am always available to do fundraisers, especially for nonprofits. What I do is I'll put on a self-defense workshop and things like that and just continue and just completely give them the proceeds from that. Any way that I can help, and I'm new to Hot Springs, so I'm getting the word out there and I'm making the connections that I need to get out to get the word out there. But again, I'm just a vehicle. I'm very fortunate that I survived. Not only survived, but I've come through it with a skill and a passion that I do to help others come through it. So I'm just here as a vehicle for the universe to empower others.
That's awesome. Is there anything else? Let's see. It says here you're writing your biography.
I am. I'm super thrilled about it because when I was going through this, especially with DID, I read every book. Well, I'm a reader, so I read every book I could possibly find. And believe it or not, there's really not a lot on DID and abuse and that kind of outcome from it. So I was determined to give another resource, especially now with your platform. I understand how important it is that I finish this book to help others, because every book that I've written, and I'm sure every time I listen now to the stories, I can't wait to go back and listen to, they inspire me and they give me hope. And I want to be able to, again, have one more tool to give hope to others, again, that have gone through what we have gone through.
It says, Diana Strong, this is the title, Diana Strong, My Journey from Multiple Personalities to Choosing My Identity. Can you explain choosing your identity?
Absolutely. I'm super pumped about the title. It came to me once because for many years, for most of my years, again, I didn't understand what was going on. And even when I did, I couldn't stop the switching and having those gaps in memory and the repercussions from just switching and not knowing what the heck did I do yesterday and how did that affect what happens today. Oh, I met this person. I don't ever remember meeting them, but I have to pretend I do remember meeting them because they obviously know me. I mean, that would happen all the time. So going from that to when I decided to change my name, what had happened was I decided that, you know what, I'm letting go, because it was when I was going through my divorce from my second husband in 2018, and I was filing the paperwork. I'm sorry, in 2000, and it wasn't 18, it was 2020. This is 2019. And I was filling out the paperwork, and I realized they said, well, what last name do you want to go to? You know, you have that option as a female. And I was, and I said, well, obviously I'm not Bishop anymore. That's my old married name. I went back to my first husband. He abused me. Then I went back to my stepfather. He abused me. And my biological father obviously left and, you know, and whatever. So anyway, so I had no last name. So I said, well, what last name do I change it to? That's when I said, you know what? I'm going to decide what last name defines me. And it took me months and months and months. And finally, when I heard Strong on a podcast, I researched, because whenever I thought of a word, I would research the meaning and all that. And when I looked at Strong in a definition, the multiple definitions, I said, that's who I am. That defines me. And then my name was Donna, my first name, and my mother was extremely abusive, and she was a drug addict. And I, like I said, I disowned her way before her actual death. She died to me. So I decided, I said, well, I'm going to also pick a name that defines me as a first name. So Diana, I was called Diana a lot as Donna. I didn't like that name. And then Diana, like Diana Prince, you know, Wonder Woman, I'm a superhero nut because I can, I want to save the world, right? So that's how I came to Diana Strong. And so that's why I said I chose that. And then what I did was once I chose my name, I also thought daily on what that looked like, what I wanted me to look like. Instead of having me lose those gaps in time, which I can't change that. But the gaps that I do remember, I wanted to be that strong person that I have now become. And I've walked into that role. So that's why I said going from multiple personalities to choosing my identity, I chose to be the person I am today.
Wow. That might even be an epiphany for a DID solution, is for somebody to, you know, do what you did. Go and find a name, you know, and
try to
just master a new identity and, you know, leave the old behind somehow. You know what I'm saying?
Well, absolutely. Every single last name attached to it had abuse. My first name had abuse. I said, I'm done with that. And that's why changing my name was huge. It was huge in the healing process and my growth.
This is the first I've heard of doing this, but it sounds like you're on a track to pathway to healing through that. That's something you might, well, I'm sure you're going to put it in your book.
Absolutely.
So we need that book out, and Darlene needs to get her book out. I tried to help her, but I don't know how to format books. I just know how to edit them. So I apologize to Darlene that I bit off more than I can chew. Anyway, but I'm glad to hear she's got somebody. So let's go to Kim. We're going to go back through the panel, and then the show's probably going to end. I'll ask the panel to just make a quick comment, and then we'll get back to how you want to end the show, okay? Kim, you're on with Diana. We're winding up the show. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Can you tell me again, Diana, what your foundation is that you're starting?
Strong Sanctuary for Survivors is what it's called. It will be called.
Sanctuary for Survivors. Oh, I love that. And have you ever heard of Darkness to Light?
I have not, no.
So I'm a facilitator.
And what's
for
it called,
them,
Darkness?
And so it's Darkness
I want
to,
write this
to Light.
Down. Okay.
Yeah. And if you go on their website, it's the letter D, the number 2, and the letter L, .org, D2L.org. And they've got all kinds of classes and things that you can do on there. So it's a great reference for people. You know, if anybody is coming in and not only getting that physically strong, but also, you know, having these tools in your mind, which I love. When I found out about this curriculum 5 years ago, I was on board immediately. Mm. And I had to go to Oklahoma to get my license or my certificate to get be a facilitator. But it's such a good program. It's an evidence-based, and they're working on new curriculum now, too. And then also the Monique Burr Foundation, they work with. So the Darkness to Light is an adult class. It's a two-hour class, and you can take it online as well. And which we believe, and I love that about the Darkness to Light, is that they believe that adults need to have this education. You know, we're still talking to the kids like they know what's going on, right? Like what you said, I didn't know what was going on when I was that little either. I couldn't name it. And as a matter of fact, I just thought my friend was a lot more mature than I was because I saw her being abused when I ran out. But, you know, we need to educate adults more than anything, and we need to make them start taking more accountability. But then also the Monique Burr Foundation is on the other side where we go into schools and we'll educate children about body safety.
Oh, I love that. Okay,
safety.
So.
Yeah.
Kim, what's that second foundation? I have the first one. I found that. What is it, Monique something? What is it?
Burr. B as in boy, U-R-R. Monique Burr.
Okay, Monique Burr. Okay, cool. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm fired up. I already
you're
have it on
welcome.
My computer.
And
thank you
all that you're doing. And I'm writing a book, too. We'll have to talk about it.
Yes.
But I love that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kim. Darlene?
Yes.
Darlene. I just wanted you to know that I had
MPD DID as well, and I used to be in a work group at the Girl South. That's how long ago it was, you know, when everybody had to basically be online under Girl South or AOL or something like that, you know. But it's grown, and I can remember the very first book I read about the multiple personality thing. I bought it at a church Christian bookstore. I ended up throwing that book. It really ticked me off. I did not agree with the book. It was saying that people, it's really demons within us.
Oh, come on. Be angry.
Yes, that's what it said. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, I believe it.
I got mad.
I believe it.
I got rid of that book. I didn't read no more after that, you know.
That makes me so upset because, again, I hear you. I know someone who, yeah, I get you. It's wrong, and it's not demons. It's the freaking brain trying to protect ourselves from trauma that should never have happened. I'm so sorry I'm down.
That's
calming
right.
down now.
That's right. It's okay. You know, we got a right to be angry about these crazy people judging us. You would think that we had leprosy or something like that. You know what I mean?
And it's just, they're just so naive. That's all that is. Yep.
Right.
I'm sorry,
yeah.
Love.
Stigma.
That's just not okay. Yeah.
That is our body.
Yeah.
You know, everybody should understand because they dissociate in some way sometimes when they get a trauma and you kind of stand back stupefied. That's the literacy of dissociation. You know what I mean? So they should understand
absolutely.
Being disoriented. You know what I mean?
Well, you see, what I've come
right.
to think is, well, what I've come to know is this. I embrace my DID now because you know what? Because of my DID, I survive what most won't. I'm not an addict
exactly.
today. I'm not a whore. I am someone who lives an upstanding lifestyle and helps other people because of my DID, because it has done that. My brain has done that to protect me, and I'm not embarrassed anymore about it. I'm proud of it.
Yeah, let's
right.
high five up in the air. I'm doing an imaginary
That's
high
right.
five. Woo.
That's right.
That's right. It's a good name. Strong.
Thanks. You too, man. Thank you so much, lady.
You're
Thank
welcome. You, darling. All right. Let's see what Bill has to say about all this.
Bill. Well, I'll tell you what. I know Darlene well enough to know that she also has the same thing that she deals with. But see, the way I shared earlier, I didn't mention that. And because I don't think it's my job to say in public what other people have told me and now if I knew Darlene wouldn't care, and frankly, I think she's in that category. There are people who say, please feel free to tell anybody about my story or whatever and so forth. But I'm just saying that we have to kind of honor each other's stories as being kind of private. Once you put it out on the radio, I understand there's a certain amount of publicity to it. But even with the two of you on the same panel, I didn't want to say, as a matter of fact, there's someone here on the panel
yeah.
who's, you know what I mean? I didn't want to do that
yeah.
to you. But I know Darlene could read between the lines. So she came forward herself, which is what I expected. There's a lot of people who suffer from this. And there's a lot of misunderstanding about it. This is the kind of stuff that probably in, you know, what we think of as medieval, but it really wasn't that long ago, times, they did talk about, oh, that person has witches in them or, you know, evil in them or devils in them and all that. No. It's a actual, you know, it's a problem. It's a psychological problem, DID, dissociative identity disorder. And we need to honor those who are suffering from it. All right. I also want to say thank you very much for acknowledging NASCA's role in what you've done. We want people to go out there and use the NASCA name. Tell people that NASCA made a difference for them. Tell them that you're a member of the NASCA family. Tell them that you're a representative of NASCA and so forth. That's how we grow. And, you know, we're doing fine, no problem. But, you know, half of our job is to educate. And it's really up to each of us individually to carry that message and get people to start looking at the website, listening to the radio shows, making donations, which we sorely need, and so forth. Anyway, thank you so much for coming on tonight. You are a strong person, and I think it's a terrific choice. So God bless, and we love you, and hopefully you'll come back.
Oh, gosh, Bill, thank you. Oh, you can't get rid of me now.
Good.
I look forward to listening to your next radio shows and getting caught up on the ones you've already done.
There's
3,000.
You're welcome on the panel anytime, you know. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay. I guess I'll have a lot to listen to then, but it's nice to have a new family. Thank you, everybody. Thank you for allowing me to be part of your lives for tonight.
Thank you, Bill. As the director of communications, I want to get you to call me, Diana, and we're going to talk about what else on the website and see if there's any volunteer position you might want to do. Because we have a lot of volunteer positions that don't take much time. And I'm going to bring William on, and then we've got a minute left. Go, William, do you have anything to say?
Well, thank you for doing what you did. I had to change my name, too, because my name was Bill, but because of confusion between Bill, I changed my name back to William. But I'm really, really glad about what you guys are doing. And you're doing a good job, and keep up the good work, and I'm proud of you.
Aw. Thank you, William.
I know Darlene really well, too, so hope to.
Yeah,
I know a few people.
Big powerhouse, aren't we, Will?
Oh, yeah, well, together we are.
That's right. Yeah. Thank you. Okay, I'm going to give you a minute, Diana, to leave the audience with a nugget.
Okay. The note I would leave on is, especially you new people out there, know that you're not alone, and whatever you're feeling, whatever you've been through, it's no comparison to where you can be and where you can go. You are as strong as you decide to be. You have people here that will support you. Find some people that can support you where you are physically or emotionally. But now, above all else, just know that you are loved and you're valuable and you're strong and you're courageous. And no matter what, you can get through whatever's going on or whatever has happened. The future is bright. Believe in yourself and reach for the stars, because you can accomplish anything you set your mind to. I'm proof of that.
Perfect, Diana. Diana Strong, everybody. And I'm going to say good night. From the NASCA family, the National Association of Adults of Child Survivors of Child Abuse. Good night, everybody.
Love Talk Radio.